when Lanier started typing on the iPad, the first thing she typed was, "Thank you for releasing my voice." And the second thing she typed was, "Tell my mom I love her. Tell my dad he's my hero."
When she told me what Lanier had typed, I can honestly say it took me upwards of 2 years before I could ever say that without crying.
Put another log on the fire. Nobody here is getting tired.
Welcome to The Fire Pit with Matt Ginella.
It was January 26, 2018. I was reporting on the PGA Merchandise Show for Golf Channel's Morning Drive. I was on the set they had in the middle of Orlando's Convention Center, and I was joined by Bobby Weed, the golf course architect, who was sharing details of the course he was designing and building in Hope Sound, Florida, for none other than Michael Jordan. At the end of that segment, we talked about technology, how it was helping him professionally, but also personally, which is what led us to a conversation about his daughter, Lanier, who at 18 months old was diagnosed with nonverbal autism. He told me that when she was 14 years old, they heard about facilitated communications, a therapy developed in Australia and Denmark in the 1970s, which was greatly advanced by technology and specifically iPads. According to raisingchildren.net.au, facilitated communications involves a facilitator physically supporting the hand, wrist, or arm of an autistic person while they spell out words on a keyboard or similar device. What Bobby Weed told me that day, and what Leslie Weed says in the intro to this podcast, which is from the video feature we just published on firepitcollective.com and on the Fire Pit's YouTube channel, when Lanier Weed got in front of a keyboard, the first thing she typed, "Thank you for releasing my voice." If you haven't seen that feature or read the story, I suggest you do so before listening to this podcast. As you learn in the video, "Jailed My Entire Life" was another one of Lanier Weed's first messages. But now she is free, and one letter at a time, she's sending profound messages and perspectives that are having a significant impact on the world we live in. Her goal, which she also typed, is just that, to change the world. Ever since that interview with Bobby Weed back in 2018, I've wanted to track him down and hear more of Lanier's story. This podcast, a recent interview with Bobby and Leslie Weed, is a follow-up to that feature on Lanier and the Weed family. In this podcast, we hear about where Lanier is now at the age of 24, 10 years after typing her first sentence. We hear about HEAL and the impact their foundation is having in its 20th year of existence. We talk about the impact the PGA Tour has had on that foundation. They talk about Arnold Palmer, Dean Beaman, and Jay Monahan, just some of the people who have helped the Weeds along the way. Bobby and Leslie also reflect on Pete and Alice Dye and what Players' Championship Week means to them and their community. I start the conversation by asking, how are the Weeds?
Everybody's good here. It's checking in almost, a couple times a week, whatever, daily. Just Lanier's doing great and her group home. The girls are still in Nashville. I think our middle daughter, Carly, is coming in tomorrow for the Players' Championship. So we're here this week. I was gone all last week on the road. So I got back this weekend. So we're all going to be together, and it should be a good week. Weather's great for the Players' Championship. Yeah. The only thing we're missing is you.
I'm actually arriving on Sunday. I'll tell you about that later. But Leslie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Lanier's progress is, she's just doing so good. She's in an adult program this year. She's out of school, and her group, they make candles and soaps, and they're selling them online. And we had a little showing and made like $4,000. So, she's got purpose, and she's making things, and she picks out the colors and the scents, and pours the candle wax, and they're all, she names them all. It's really cool.
Quite the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, not surprising. What you know, having now learned, you know, learned about Lanier and her story, and then your story, and how this all, I mean, I get chills just even starting to talk about it. You know, Bobby, this goes back to that original conversation we had on the set of Morning Drive at the PGA Merchandise Show. I don't know how many years ago that was. Maybe let's say 5 years ago. And from that point forward, I was always so curious. I mean, I obviously knew of you. I knew of your work. I had talked a lot about your relationship with the dyes and your impact in the world of architecture. But when you told me that when you gave an iPad to your nonverbal autistic daughter and she was able to type, I finally have a voice, that just knocked me over. I mean, and in so many ways. And from that point forward, I always was more curious to understand more about Bobby Weed and his family, which is what brought us to Ponte Vedra, in which we were able to actually learn more about this story. I you know, in so many ways, something like this that happens to a family, Leslie, like you said, everything was going along, and then all of a sudden, Lanier started going backwards. That can tear a family apart, or it can make a family closer together. I that's just from my casual observations from families that go through things in which they really get tested and challenged. And I'm just inspired by how you, as a family, just seem to get closer together. I know it's not always that easy, and I know there's probably been a lot of turbulent days and stretches, but it just, and now look, getting to know you guys and observing through various aspects of social media, it just really makes me inspired to see how close you guys are as a family unit.
Yeah, you know, Bobby set that in motion when she started regressing, and we took her in for all these testings, and it was words. I had to learn a whole new language. I had to, you know, and it was just the shock of it all. And I remember calling Bobby, I think he was in Texas. I could hear him hammering a steak. And I was like, I can't be there for the girls. And cause I was volunteer coordinator at their school. I was at their school every day for at least 3 or 4 hours, volunteering everywhere. And I was always in the halls, and I'm never going to be able to do that anymore. I'm going to not be a good mom. And it's going to ruin our lives. And that's when Bobby said, wait a minute. You're going to be a much better mom. Now we have an answer. We have answers. Now we have a list of things we need to start doing. And she will be the glue and the bond of our family. And we're going to be Team Weed. And we sat the girls down and said, you know, you all play soccer. You don't like sitting on the bench. You like to get out on the field. Well, Lanier's on the bench. And we're going to get her off the bench and on the field. And Team Weed is going to do that. And Bobby really set that in motion because I was a mess. And he just said, yeah, day by day, we're going to do this. And, you know, we're here today.
Well, maybe so. But Matt, in reality, she was as much the glue as anything for being a mom, being a mother, being a wife. And just totally immersed herself in all of this. I mean, we were pioneering. We didn't know anything about the mission we were on or where we were going with it. We just knew we were in a crisis mode, and it was 24/7. And we just had to figure it out. We had to deal with it. We had to figure it out and deal with it on a hour-to-hour basis in a, and with the rest of our family and our children. It was a mess. It was a true mess. And while I was traveling and working, you know, we didn't have the benefit of, we had plenty of insurance, but insurance doesn't recognize autism.
They do now, but that back then they didn't.
Back then they didn't. So we were loading up, with, therapists, Leslie was seeking out information on who we needed to go see, what kind of, I mean, because you looked up autism in a dictionary or an encyclopedia or a medical journal, and there was virtually nothing.
Yeah.
There was nothing substantial. Nothing substantial about it. And so we basically had to learn on our own. And Leslie was the one that really took the bull by the horns.
But remember, I came home one day and I said, we have to get Lanier to the specialist in Chicago. We have to get her to Chicago. I'll just drive. And because we knew she couldn't handle being in an airport. And Bobby came, you know, very nonchalantly came home that afternoon and he said, Arnold Palmer's given us his plane to fly us to Chicago to see the specialist. And it was like, wow, that was just.
We had to go to New Orleans and we had to rent a plane. We you know, everywhere we went, we had to just.
Well, that's charter. Dean Beeman.
We had to charter a plane.
Helped us get his plane.
You know, the golf world is really small.
So generous. And,
so small circle of folks. And, you know, when you have friendships and relationships in business and in personal relationships, you know, it's okay to reach out. And that's what we did. And, you know, we got a lot of help. And then ultimately, when we started our foundation, the pillar of our foundation was the support of the PGA Tour, mm-hmm. you know, which I worked for 13 years. And they were like, look, you know, we want to choose some charities to help. And we think you have a good cause. And we want to be part of you and your family because we know you personally. And we know how much time you spent with the PGA Tour. And, you know, we want to.
It was called Adopt a Charity.
We want to adopt your charity.
And they gave us their clubhouse. We had the very first gala in the brand new clubhouse. They gave us the golf course. And I mean, I just couldn't even believe it. When I met with them, I didn't have a board and they're like, where are your people? I'm like, oh, well, they couldn't make it. I was like, man, I got to get to work fast. But, you know, our first gala, I think we raised $580,000 or something crazy like that. So it was really great.
That's been good all along.
This relationship with the tour, Bobby, and specifically Sawgrass and the Dyes and all the TPC properties that you've been a part of, from what I'm hearing, you guys look at that as almost all of this is an extended family for you. Is that what I'm hearing?
You know, the whole time I was at the PGA Tour, it was a family. And I think Dean Beeman set that in motion as much as anybody. And, you know, even to this day, the players feel like they are part of a family being the PGA mm-hmm. Tour. And I think that's one reason why the PGA Tour has sustained itself to the highest level over many, many, many decades. And basically the history and heritage that mm-hmm. That comes with the PGA Tour, you know, we have so many people to be thankful for. From so many decades ago. And now all of a sudden we have this new millennial generation playing on the tour. And, you know, they've bought in to the family and that's truly what it is in our sense. And certainly I found that to be true within, my years of working with the PGA Tour and, from an administrative standpoint and all my travels, it's very close knit. And to this day, I've been gone a long time and I still have a lot of very close friends mm-hmm. Associated with the PGA Tour.
Well, and our neighbor's Jay Monahan, and, you know, he's very generous to Heal and to us. And he brought us a stack of iPads one time and, you know, here for your mission. And it was just, you knocked on my door. Hey, I've got some iPads for you. So it continues.
Well, so many really cool things that you guys just mentioned. The Arnold Palmer loaning you his plane, Dean Beeman helping you guys get it. And obviously the Dyes, I'm sure, had a lot of big role in that. All to this day, Jay Monahan now giving you guys a stack of iPads. Technology gets, you know, a bad rap sometimes as it relates to, you know, we've got teenagers, kids. We're trying to balance the understanding of you know, how much is okay, how much is too much, you know, social media, all that. But in reality, technology changed your lives, right? Changed the life of Lanier and a lot of people like her. Tell me a little bit more about that moment in which you guys go from having a nonverbal autistic daughter who you're trying to understand and to raise as your daughter, and then she gets a voice, and now you get a look into who she really is. That to me is where this whole story just goes to a whole nother level.
I went and got trained. It's just not handing an iPad and then she starts typing. It's a technique. And we started this technique. We went to Syracuse, New York, a bunch of us moms and teachers, and got trained and came back. And I was like, there's just no way. I believe these other kids were doing it. I couldn't fathom that Lanier could do this. And she sat down with her coach. And the first thing she typed was, "Thank you for releasing my voice. Tell my mom I love her. Tell my dad he's my hero. Stop the baby talk." Now, that is when I was like, oh my gosh, that is her. And it took her at least 45 minutes to get that out, because she'd type a letter and then have to, you know, get that letter in her head and then, you know, hand-eye coordination and hit it on the iPad. Now we call it turbo typing. She types pretty fast, just pecking with one finger. But it is really... just an example, last week, three or four weeks ago, we changed her onto a different medication. And so we went in with her doctor, and he's like, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 to 10, you know, where are we on this? You know, how are you feeling? And she goes, we're at a 5, which means we're getting there. But just to monitor her medication, or I have a headache, or, you know, where do you want to go? I want to have pizza today. You know, just little things like that are so huge for us.
It's feedback. It's communication. It's insight also. And this, you know, what she says, and we talk about this, but what she says in the piece about, like, people who judge, you know, that incredibly perceptive quote, people who judge people, who think they know people, are like, that's an indictment on them, as you know what I'm saying? Like, that to me is also what kind of turns everything, is when she's absorbing all of that for so much of her life. And now she's able to turn that back around and say, no. If you think you know a person, whether whoever that is, color of skin or autistic or what, any kind of handicap or looks or appearances, you don't. You got to, that the fact that you're judging that person and you think that, oh, an autistic person has no ability to, like, process the world around them, that's wrong. And we're all wrong.
I mean, look at Stephen Hawking. You wouldn't have, if you walked up on him, you would have never known how brilliant he was had he not had his ability to communicate. I think he did with the eyes. But that's the same thing. You know, somebody could walk up on him and judge him and go, you know, who's that over there? But he's brilliant. And our daughter's brilliant. And all these kids in Ponte Vedra now who are nonverbal, I think we have 30 kids who've never spoken a word in their life, who are, you know, typing away and
they're brilliant. Brilliant genius is what they are. They are incredibly.
Lanier uses words smart. I have to go look up. I'm like, wait, is this a word? I don't think that's a word. Oh, gosh, it is a word.
it's amazing. It's really powerful. It's very heavy. It's powerful. It's inspirational. It's informational. It's like, it's just all of these different things that fold into one. And you guys have lived it. Heal. Tell me a little bit more about where you're at with your foundation and the progress you're making to try to help so many more people other than just Lanier.
Yes. HEAL stands for Helping Enrich Autistic Lives. Next year is going to be our 20-year anniversary. Makes me feel old.
You guys look great, by the way. You look great.
We've pulled in about over $5 million. Since then, and we're just a tiny little foundation. I have a one paid employee that's executive director. I'm, you know, major volunteer. I don't pay myself. I consider it my ministry to help others. In the summers, we have about 15 camps. We have one at the PGA Tour, HUG, Help Us Golf. We've done that camp probably 16 or 17 years. And all the teaching pros take 3 days off, half days off, and come and do golf camps with our kids. They let them ride in the ball picker up thing. They get with the maintenance. They cut holes in the greens. I mean, so it's very holistic almost. They
go out on the course.
Yeah, they go out on the course with, they have a checklist of all the native plants and all the animals, and they'll, you know, spot an eagle and check that off their list. So that, you know, they incorporate the whole golf into not just putting and hitting. And then the last day they get hit on number 17. And these boys and girls, you know, started 10, 15 years ago. And now, you know, they're out playing on the golf Olympics, Special Olympics. And they can't wait for that week. And they video them all. They can see themselves on videos. And the teaching pros tell me, this is truly, we do TPC, we do all that, but this is really a really fun week. And they can see each year how the kids, you know, get better and better.
But the surf camp is full. The surf camp is full as soon as we announce it.
And we have 200 volunteers.
Unbelievable volunteers. We have bowling. We have fishing. We go to the art museum.
And they do art.
So, I mean, we
music,
have
horseback riding. the list goes on. And then we've raised enough money. We've given out 500 iPads to 500 teachers in a 5-county area. And then the trikes, the 3 rural trikes, those big trikes, we realize these kids can't ride a bike. They can't balance. So we've given 300 trikes to 150 schools, 2 trikes, so that coaches can get on. We do it through the PE. And then the kids get on and ride in the track, and the whole class is like running beside them. So they're, you know, learning coordination, and it's just so much fun to ride a bike. So that's our big initiatives that we've been doing, that it's just so much fun to deliver them and see the kids get excited and, you know, get on the bike and ride around the track.
To go from, you know, feeling like we are in crisis mode to now, you've raised over $5 million. You're giving iPad. You now have this, you know, strengthened relationship with your daughter, and your family is where it's at. Like, does that just feel like lives ago that you went through all that?
It does. And you know, my daughters Haley and Carly, I mean, they were like little mamas. They were just running around helping me. They never complained ever. I think they're like, mom's got it pretty bad. So I think we're not going to go through that teenage stuff. We're here to help, you know? And you know, I tell moms now, cause I was always felt like I was in a sprint, you know, and it's a marathon, you know, pace yourself, take it day by day. It's easier to say, but when you're in the middle of it, you can hardly breathe. You're like, I got to help my daughter. You know, I'd be somewhere at a cocktail party or something, and somebody's talking about something, and all in my head is like, my daughter can't talk. I got to help her. I couldn't get out of that total, you know, sprint. I'm in the sprint. I got to keep going. I got to keep running. And I look back now, and I could have relaxed a little bit along the way, but I didn't know what I was dealing with. Doctors didn't, you know, autism just sprang up out of nowhere, really. These type, like my daughter, the nonverbal, and you know, they were trying to figure it out too. So we were all in there figuring it out.
There's something to that, right? I know you've spent a lot of time researching, but you know, the idea that autism is, and I know you know the numbers, but we've gone from a time in which autism wasn't really, you know, it wasn't happening very, autistic children, it, you know, that were, there weren't a lot of them. And now it feels like that's something that's more prominent. I don't know if you want to get into that, but.
Well, it's 1 in 44, and 4 out of 5 are boys. So the girls are rare. I mean, the boys just got nailed. You know, you can't have a genetic epidemic. It's an epidemic. And like, I go to these high schools, and every high school has at least over 100 in population. And these kids are in classrooms no more than 6. So it's like a whole city behind these high schools, those modulars.
Portable, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like a whole city back there. And, you know, there are a lot of theories. You know, ours was vaccine injury, you know, without a doubt. I mean, you don't have a perfectly walking, talking child at 16, 17, 18 months, and then they lose all that. And she didn't walk till she was almost three again. So, I mean, she lost all her motor. So it's really brain motor. It's not, and so her intelligence wasn't touched, but because somebody walks with a gait or somebody can't talk or they, you know, do funny, weird stuff, you just think, oh, they don't have, you know, the brain is not in there, but we have realized it's all motor. That motor that's connected to the brain is somehow damaged. A lot of these kids also have autoimmune disorders, and that's the immune system got nailed at the same time. Yeah.
Leaves him vulnerable in a lot of ways, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then being nonverbal, being able to now get access into what they're feeling from inside, that unlocks the box, right? Being able to now then, yeah.
And then she telling us the first time she realized that she wasn't speaking, because you know how you talk in your head. And she was about three or four. And she said, I always thought that thoughts were transferred through the brain. I thought I was talking to you. And I said, oh my gosh, did you think we were ignoring you? And she said, no, I felt like you just immediately forgot what I said. And then putting the pieces together that, oh my gosh, I can't speak. And that's when she became inconsolable and, you know, upset all the time and coming after people. Cause she said, I was trying to get great words out. And now she can get her words out.
She says that she wants to change the world. How is her mission going? I mean, day to day and in what you're doing through HEAL, I mean, you are changing the world in this story, in these conversations and within your community in a way. Does she feel like she's making progress in her mission to change the world?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've read her excerpts from Helen Keller, who, you know, couldn't see and couldn't, you know, speak and, you know, learn how to do this in her hands. And people didn't believe that, you know. So I gain a lot of my own inner strength because I've just read every single thing I could get my hands on that Helen Keller wrote and her mother. And Annie Sullivan. And I feel like we are that. And so because of the typing, another mother has opened up a school where we're on the same curriculum as St. John's County High Schools. And we have teachers facilitating these kids. And Lanier did all. She was doing algebra and stuff. And so that is huge. The fact that we have over 30 kids in the Jacksonville area that have been trained, and we brought in trainers to train teachers. And now we have teachers that are training other teachers. So we really have kind of like a mecca here. Atlanta has a few people and, you know, all these big cities, but they are not connected like we are. And that is because of Lanier. And, you know, that's her mission.
She brings awareness on a almost daily, weekly basis. She's really proud of what we're doing with HEAL. And it's incredibly gratifying to us with the foundation to be able to go out and assist other families, knowing how we struggled with some resources. And so many don't have some of those resources. So it's very gratifying for us to establish the pillars of our foundation, mainly bringing about awareness and education, along with these summer camps, just giving the family some hope and some relief.
Respite.
And so, you know, that's just a big part of our family taking all this on, being, you know, being givers and not takers and trying to help other families. I mean, that's the gratification that we've received out of it. And we'll continue that mission. And Lanier understands and knows that. She wants to go to college. And She has a lot of things that she wants to achieve, and she's just a beautiful young lady inside and out. And you know, I have to say that Leslie single-handedly brought her out of that deep, dark autistic world to where she is today. And you know, we'll all be forever grateful for that, because so many children get left behind and aren't cared for properly, and it just breaks our heart. And so, you know, we're trying to do something right here in North Florida that makes a difference. And you know, we have a lot of folks that have been generous donors to our cause, along with the PGA Tour early on. They've been a big supporter. So we live in a wonderful community, mm-hmm. and people are moving here in part because of what Leslie and her team of mothers. I mean, between Leslie and these other mothers of autistic children, I'm telling you, Matt, they can truly move mountains. I've seen it. And I'm just so proud of all of them. And you know, without Leslie, most of our dreams would never have been, you know, have never been able to come true. So, so that's a big part of it.
It's amazing. I've known you, Bobby, for a long time. We've, you know, and I've learned a lot about your career and your architecture. But when I met Leslie, I was like, okay, well, this is the heart and soul of this family. I love you, Bobby. You're an amazing guy. But I was like, okay, Leslie is this is like a rocket ship. I mean, this is how do people help? How do people help? How can people get involved if they're so inspired?
Well, our website is healautismnow.org, and there's a little donate button. You can hit it. I think Bobby has our website on his bobbyweed.com. So yeah, I mean, money is where it's at. And you know, we enable so many teachers, so many educators at school. And you know, I'll say, hey, won't you write a grant? Don't you need $2,500? And they're like, what? Yeah, we buy smart boards. And I mean, you know, they get all the dregs, they get all the hand-me-downs. And these teachers are just, it's like they've won the lottery. We always go and surprise them with iPads and call them all to the office, and they think they're in trouble, and they're just jumping around and kissing us. And you know, the kids are excited. So.
Well, it's a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful tool for all of these public schools and all of these teachers and therapists as well. So it's proven to really open up new channels and avenues that these children and young adults have never had access to.
A lot of them can't hold a pencil, but they can tap and they can swipe. And that's why the iPad is just revolutionary.
Well, it's incredible. And I can't thank you enough for sharing all of this with me and us. And we look forward to then sharing this story with everybody, you know, who'd be so inclined. It's a gift, you know, what you guys are doing, and your story is a gift that keeps giving, obviously, day to day, you know, week to week, month to month. I mean, this kid to kid, family to family, it just keeps going. And so thank you for all of that. It's been a very special, of all the stories I've told or, you know, this one is just one that just means so much more than most. So,
well, we appreciate that, Matt. And, you know, most people know Pete Dye, Bobby Weed, Tom Fazio by their name and what they've done in the golf business. But let me tell you, Tom Fazio has a wonderful foundation and a very, very giving individual.
Mm-hmm. He's given to us a lot.
Pete and Alice had a heart of gold, and they were just such a dynamic duo. And they did more than just golf course design, no different than Arnold with his charitable giving, and Jack and Barbara as well. I mean, mm-hmm. the story just goes on and on and on. Ernie has a great school down in Jupiter. So, I mean, There's a lot of folks out there that are helping to push these mountains to give these children and young adults a better future.
The Winnie Palmer Hospital in Orlando saved our son's life. If we weren't in that hospital under that care with a prolapsed umbilical cord with our son, he had 5 minutes, you know, and the doctor came in and said, if you weren't here and at this hospital and that nurse hadn't identified that situation, you know, and that's the Winnie Palmer Hospital, you know, I mean, that was, you know, that, so, you know what I mean? And I know Jack is very involved in the hospital. To your point, it's not just about, you know, leaving a legacy of, oh, people running around and making birdies and pars and bogey. It goes beyond that. So it is a pretty special community. This week, obviously, and all the effort you put into Sawgrass, Bobby, and this golf course, and now what it's become as a Players Championship, and going back to those days where you had to walk around with that notebook and you had to take notes on what the players thought about that original design to where it is now. Does this week always mean just so much more to you than a lot of other weeks that come up on the PGA Tour calendar?
No question. It harkened back to when I came here and all the folks, starting with Dean, and the vision he had, and all the staff, Vernon Kelly, and then Tim Fincham behind him, and now Jay leading the helm at the PGA Tour. You know, all the charitable monies that have been generated, not only here at the Players Championship, but throughout the PGA Tour. I mean, we're all about charity and giving. And it's a family. And for me here this week, you know, to host one of the biggest events, if not the biggest event on the PGA Tour, being the Players Championship course here and the Players Championship for the Players, it's very special. It's grown in every way from where we were back in the early days and to a point where all the other tournaments send their chairman here every year to see what we're doing here at Sawgrass. And because it's showing the way for all these other events and tournaments to improve. And so it just, you know, it takes a village. I mean, we have a massive amount of volunteers that work tirelessly mm-hmm. at all of the PGA Tour events, and we have great sponsors. So, I mean, it just feels good. It feels right. And the players are just as good as they've ever been. It's the best tour on the planet. And the venue that we have here this week and coming up this weekend, you know, will be showcased all over the world. And for me to play a very small, minute role in that process early on in the foundation and building of this property.
It's a little bigger than minute, Bobby. I mean, I think it's
very gratifying.
Pete, I think, was like, hey, man, you take this. I'm busy. I'm moving on to other things. Bobby, you go back to Sawgrass and fix that place.
Well, it's turned out to be a great golf course and a great venue, and I'm just proud to be here, and I'm going to enjoy some of it this week. Yep. But it does bring back some very fond memories of some, you know, a lot of hours and a lot of changes and transformations that have taken place on this property. But to be where it is today, it's one of the preeminent events in the world.
Yeah, the you know, your guys' life, I mean, you guys, this, you, it's a movie, it's a book, it's books. I mean, you have, you know, simultaneously, you know, as a family, but Leslie, what you're doing with Heal, and obviously Bobby's involved there, but what Bobby's been doing in his career, you know, going on to build Michael Jordan's private golf course, Sawgrass, all the different projects you've been a part of, your relationship with the Dyes and then beyond, and all the people that you've met. I mean, it's been the life you guys lead could very easily have been one where you get, you know, tunnel focused on yourselves, but you
but here comes Lanier and all that you got. I mean, it just seems like a very enriched, path that you guys are on in a way, with the people that are involved and the giving that's going on, as you said, you know, not being takers, but being givers. That's something for all of us to learn from. For me, the perspective you just have provided, we get caught up in this live versus tour, and this is then, and that is it. And it, you know, but you can see that this has actually brought the PGA Tour closer. It's getting them to kind of refocus on what their product is, so to speak. I mean, I just think it's important to keep looking at things from a big picture, the philanthropic aspects of what the tour has done. I think we forget that. And I think, thank you for, you know, helping us remember that this isn't always just, you know, checks for the winner. And it goes much further than that. And I think you guys are an example of that. Would that be accurate, do you think? I mean, is that kind of?
No question. I mean, nobody's bigger than the game of golf itself. Golf is going to live on. It's very healthy today, and we're in a good spot. We'll continue to grow the game. A lot of folks, all the allied associations involved in growing the game. So, the game of golf is worldwide, and it has far-reaching impacts on lives through the charitable benefit of all the events across the country. I mean, it's a nationwide and global game today, and we're all part of the game. We love the game, and it gives us so much more than just the golf itself. I think we're all blessed to be where we are. I know I'm very blessed, and I've never really had a chance to take a mulligan, so I'm playing it down every day. You just take what it gives you and deal with it. And that's, you know, it's part of life. I mean, it's very similar to life.
That goes back to your guys' first date where you told me you had to see how she plays it out of the rough. Does she play it out of the rough? I remember that story, right? Doesn't that go back to the first date?
Yeah,
that's right.
You watch how people play through the tough parts of a round of golf. You knew right then you had something.
So. A lot of similarities.
Yeah. Just give me one last reflection, and obviously I would imagine it's a week like this that you probably think about Pete and Alice every day. This week in particular, I miss Pete and Alice. I got the pleasure of getting to know them quite well as my career went on, and followed them and had conversations and went to their house and got to feel the warmth, of them as people and not necessarily as this architectural tandem. Is this a week in which you think about them more than most?
No question. I mean, Pete's been gone a little over 3 years now, and it just seems like it flies by. There's probably not a day that goes by that something that he said or something that he taught me, or I ask myself, you know, what would Pete do, or would Pete approve of this? So the duo of Pete and Alice, who for the longest time I think were probably the most powerful two people in the game of golf. You just never could tell it because they were just so immersed. And then to parallel that with Dean Beaman and his vision and what he had done with the tour, when he came to Ponte Vedra and grew the tour to what it is today. I mean, we have a lot to be thankful for Dean. I wrote him a note last night and sent it to him. I wrote Vernon Kelly a note last night. They really together had the vision and brought this Tournament Players Club to where it is today. And we're all better for it. And, you know, Tim Fincham, you know, took over and did a great job. So I'm very, very thankful for, the mentors I've had access to. But these guys are so dedicated. They're so dedicated, not only to the game, but to the PGA Tour and doing the right thing. Just conducted themselves in the right way. And with the hundreds and hundreds of millions, billions now, I think, in charitable giving across the country. I mean, it's impacted so many lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to volunteer for this event, to give back, and then to see how much money is being distributed to all the local charities.
Yeah, we received money from them too.
So it's just a wonderful, warm feeling. There's so much gratification that goes with it. So yeah, it's a special week for us, and it's one for me to reflect back on. You know, where would I be without Dean Beamon? Where would I be without Pete Dye and our 45-year friendship and relationship? You know, it's just, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just fortunate and blessed to be where we are today.
And back then, there were like 40 employees when they started. One little building.
It's unbelievable.
Now it's unbelievable. Massive.
And now, you know, now look at what's going to transpire this week and how many people are going to be around that golf course, that 17th green, that, you know, that what do you remember about that, Bobby, when they're making the island green? That, was there any part of you that was like, I don't know what the hell we're doing? I guess you were already familiar with island, like, at that concept, was that just mind boggling at that time?
It was. It kind of evolved. Alice obviously had a lot to do with that, but it evolved. I mean, we have an island green from 1988 at Ponte Vedra Club. And then I know there's another one up in Connecticut, I think at Weyburn. So, but nonetheless, it evolved and turned out to be an iconic golf hole, you know, one that people love, one that people hate. But, you know, regardless, it has a tremendous amount of drama, and you know, people just flock to it, and it's just been a real staple to the golf course, to the event, and I'm sure it'll be a big factor this weekend here once again.
Guaranteed. To get sand. That's why they were digging. They were trying to get down and get some sand.
Underneath
all the muck.
Yeah, we needed sand, and that particular area had quite a bit of sand, so they kept mining the sand out of there, and the next thing you know, we had a peninsula, and then the next thing we had an island, and because we needed all the sand that we could possibly find on site, and a lot of that sand came between the 9th and the 18th golf holes. It's probably one of the big, probably the biggest lake on the golf course, and the source of most of our sand for capping the golf course. So, you know, stadium golf evolved a little bit during that process. Obviously, the golf course evolved. And, you know, it goes back to what Pete always said, you know, show me a golf course built by a set of plans, and I'll show you a bad golf course, because it truly happens in the field. And nobody was in the field more than Pete. And you know, a lot of that he handed down to myself and many others that are out in the business today. So we're all better for it. We're all very grateful. And every one of us have Pete and Alice to thank for much of our career, but also leaving a legacy of golf courses, much like some of the great musicians are, you know, leaving their music behind for us to enjoy. You know, all these great artisans are leaving golf courses here for future generations to enjoy. And that's a great thing about golf.
Well, I know all about your music collection, your record collection, the actual vinyls, which I thoroughly enjoyed that night, going through. That was incredible. Lastly, you talked about, there isn't a day go by that you think something that Pete might have said, or would Pete approve? Give me a couple nuggets that you'll always think about when you get going on a project, or when you're assessing your own work. What are some of the things that he taught you that always go through your head?
Well, he always, at the start of a project, even talking to an owner about a new project, you know, one of the first questions he always asked was, who is he building the golf course for? Who are we building this golf course for? Because that's very, very, very important. And first and foremost, I think you have to understand that on the front end. And the fact that he was never completely satisfied. He always thought that whatever he was working on, shaping and molding a golf hole, you know, there was always something that he would go back and say, you know, I think it could be better. Let's change this or let's just keep rubbing on it until it gets better. And it was always somewhat funny because the saddest day for Pete always was the day we grassed the golf hole because he couldn't do anything else after that. But that didn't stop him. That didn't stop him. If he wanted to make a change, he could make a change. And, you know, he was a great salesman. He was so passionate. And, I mean, he could, you know, he could sell Ray Charles prescription sunglasses if he needed to. I mean, he was just, he had that great Midwestern wit about him. And, he just,
he treated everybody equally.
He treated everybody the same. And that was an important takeaway for me. It didn't matter if you were in the trenches, putting in irrigation, putting in drainage, running a piece of equipment, or the superintendent or the owner. I think he seemed to be able to treat everybody the same. And, you know, the bottom line is if you were a lover of the game, you were a friend of Pete Dye's. So a lot of that has been handed down to many of the folks that worked under Pete and worked for Pete. I've often said many, many times that in regards to his legacy, of all the great golf courses he designed, another aspect of his legacy was all the people that he impacted and brought into this business and into this game. I think that's an equal component of his legacy.
That family tree that he has of all the people who've worked for him and all the tentacles of his legacy, he and Alice's legacy, you know, and obviously you're a key component to that, always considered a third Dye son, basically. You were on that. But I mean that to me is tremendous. I tried to do that story and create that family tree. And even then I was missing names, and it keeps going on and on. Now to this day, it just keeps going. So modern architecture, whatever is referred to as modern architecture, obviously Robert Trent Jones Sr., but also Pete Dye, that Pete Dye is the man. I mean, that there's
arguably, yes, arguably the greatest modern day architect of all time. And, right now, it's only, you know, PV's the last representative of that family, immediate family, I should say. He's got lots of cousins and relatives that are actually in the business as well. But PV and I are talking about teaming up and doing some work together yet once again. So while we started a company back in the 80s called Dye We Dye, for Pete, PB, and myself, we called it Dye Weed Dye. So now we're just back to Dye Weed. So I told PB, I'm like, we might as well keep Pete's name in there so we can just maintain the Dye Weed Dye company name.
I say that every day in my yard. Dye Weed Dye, Dye, Dye Weed. How many projects do you have going right now? What's the status of weed design? How's it going?
We're small by choice. We don't take on a lot of projects just because we kind of operate similar to how Pete did. And more often than not, I'm moving to the site and working and being hands-on. I've got a great partner and associate, Joey Graziani, working with me, that I'm bringing him along. And he's a future of the business and the industry, just like so many others. And again, I think that's inherent upon me. Which also gives me great gratification, just like it did with Pete, to bring on interns and students and give them a platform, an avenue to ultimately go out on their own eventually one day. And so that's,
you just opened one in Jacksonville.
That's a big part. Yeah, we just opened another golf course here in Jacksonville called Stillwater. First course here in almost 20 years. We've got some good projects going on. We're always chasing a few projects. So
just finished Waynesville.
We're blessed. We're blessed and fortunate. We're finishing up a project in Western North Carolina right now, in Waynesville, North Carolina, Waynesville Inn and Golf Club. And so we're excited about that. Last week I was back out in Austin and up in North Carolina and back in South Florida. So, we're constantly on the run, and, it's great. It's been great. And we're just, like I said, very fortunate and blessed, and, to have a few projects that we can work on and keeps us playing in the dirt.
You know, the, one thing, a big takeaway is you guys are each other's biggest fans. And that to me is what I talk about to my wife is when I, you know, anytime I talk to you guys or I'm around you guys or I see you guys or I get little bits and pieces, it's very obvious. And I think that is probably why all of this has worked with so much, that's why you guys are so effective. That's why you guys are able to do what you do and have had the impact you've had. And that also extends now to your daughters and certainly, obviously, Lanier. So all of this is just so inspiring. Thank you again for letting us in and sharing your story. And it keeps going on and on. And thank you. I guess that's probably just the best thing to say at this point is just thank you for being you and for doing what you're doing. Yeah.
Well, you're kind and generous. You're kind and generous. And thanks for taking the lead and running with us. And it just helps get the word out even more. So you're doing a big part in helping us as well. So thank you.
Well, talk about a minute part. That would be an appropriate use of that term at this point. But yes, Bobby Leslie, thank you, and nothing but hugs and loves to Lanier as she continues to change the world.
Thank you.
Thanks, and let us know anytime you're heading back to North Florida.
That you're always my first text, my first call.
Come on over. We'll spin some vinyls.
In.
Put another log on the fire. Nobody here is getting tired.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.